The Alan Watts iPhone app is now available on the iTunes App Store, featuring the entire Alan Watts podcast series at your fingertips. Visit alanwattsapp.com for more information.
If you have the good and the evil equally balanced, the game is boring. Nothing happens. It's stalemate. The irresistible force meets the immovable object. On the other hand, if it's all good, and there's hardly any evil, or maybe just a weeny little bit of a fly in the ointment, it also gets boring. Just in the same way, for example, supposing you knew the future and could control it perfectly, what would you do? You would say, let's shuffle the deck and have another deal. Because, for example, when great chess players sit down to a match and it suddenly becomes apparent to both of them that white is going to mate in 16 moves and nothing can be done about it, they abandon the game and begin another. They don't want to know. There wouldn't be any hide in the game, any element of surprise, if they did know the outcome. So a game with good and evil equally balanced isn't a good game. A game with the positive or good forces clearly triumphant isn't an interesting game. What we want is a game where it always seems that the good side is about to lose. I'm in really serious danger of losing. But manages always to sneak out. You know how it is in serial stories when they get the hero at the end of an installment in some absolutely impossible position where it seems that he's going to be run over by a train because he's tied with his girlfriend to the rails, and you know somehow in the next installment the author's going to get them out of the difficulty. Only he mustn't do it too obviously because you won't go on reading the next installment. So then what's necessary is a system in which the good side is always winning, but never is the winner. Where the evil side is always losing, but never is the loser. That's a very practical arrangement for a successful ongoing game which will keep everybody interested. And you must watch this in practical politics. Every in-group or group of nice people needs an out-group of nasty people. Otherwise, they wouldn't know who they were. And you must recognize then that this outgroup is your necessary enemy, whom you need. He keeps you on your toes. But you mustn't obliterate him. If you do, you're in a very dangerous state of affairs. So you have to love your enemies in this sense, regard them as highly necessary, and to be respected chivalrously. We need the communists, and they need us. The thing is to cool it and play what I call a contained conflict. When conflicts get out of hand, all sides blow up. Oh, of course, I suppose then there's another deal, maybe a million years later. Now, let me see if I can for a moment put these two visions of the world together. It seems that if you believe the Christian, Hebrew, Islamic view, that you can't admit the Hindu view. Because if you're a Christian, the one thing you cannot believe, if you say you're at all orthodox, you're an orthodox Protestant Bible type, or if you're a Roman Catholic, you can't believe that you are God. And so that excludes Hinduism, apparently. But let's go back to Judaism for a minute and ask this question. If Judaism is the true religion, can Christianity be true too? No. No. Because there's one thing in Christianity that the Jew can't admit, and that was that Jesus Christ was God. That is unthinkable for a Jew, that any man was indeed God in the flesh. All right, second question. If Christianity is the true religion, can Judaism be true too? The answer is yes, because all Christians are Jews. That is to say, they have taken in the Jewish religion, lock, stock, and barrel, in the Old Testament, into their own religion. Every Christian is a Jew plus something else, which is his particular attitude to Jesus of Nazareth. Now then, let's play this game once again. If Christianity is true, can Hinduism be true? The answer is no, for the reason that we've seen. The Christians will say Jesus of Nazareth was God, but you aren't. I'm not. Now then, if Hinduism is true, can Christianity be true? The answer is yes, because it can include it. But how? What would be the attitude of a Hindu to a very sincere and convinced Christian? He would say, "Bravo! Absolutely marvelous! What an act! Here in this Christian soul, God is playing his most extraordinary game. He is believing and really feeling that he's not himself. And not only that, but that he is living only one life. And in that life, he's got to make the most momentous decision imaginable. In the course of this 80 years, he's got to choose between everlasting beatitude and everlasting horror. And he's not quite sure how to do it. Because in Christianity there are two sins to be avoided, among others. One is called presumption, and that is knowing surely that you are saved. The other is called despair, which is knowing surely that you're damned. There's always a margin of doubt about this. Just work out your salvation in fear and trembling. So you might say that this is preeminently the gambler's religion. Imagine, you know, at some great casino, late at night, there is some marvelous master gambler who's been winning all night. And then suddenly he decides to stake his whole winnings on whether the ball lands on red or black. Sensation! Everybody gathers from all over the casino to watch this terrific gamble. So in the same way, the predicament in which the Christian soul finds itself is this colossal gamble, which is saying this universe can possibly contain in it ultimate tragedy. There could be such a thing as an absolute, final, irremediable mistake. And what a horror that thought is. And so the Hindu is sitting in the audience, fascinated by this Christian's extraordinary, reckless gamble. He says, "That's a beautiful game." The Christian doesn't know it's a game, but the Hindu suspects it is. And he's a little bit admiring it, but not quite involved. Now you would say, perhaps, now you ought to be involved. Give your whole self to this. Make an act of commitment. You know, once to every man and nation comes the moment to decide, in the strife twixt truth and falsehood for the good or evil side. Then it is the brave man chooses while a coward stands aside, etc. That sounds great, doesn't it? Commitment. Stand up and be counted. It is a virtue, but on the other hand, you see another virtue, what we call being a good sport. If your enemy in the battle of life is to be regarded as an absolute enemy, who is pure evil, black as black can be, you can't be a good sport. You can accord him no chivalry, no honors of battle. You've got to annihilate him by any means possible, fair or foul. And that leads to some pretty sticky situations, especially when he has the means of annihilating you in just the same way. But if, on the other hand, in all contests, you know that while you're going to take it seriously and regard it as very important, in the back of your mind, in that little Hintergedanke, you know it is not ultimately important, although very important. And this saves you. This enables you to be a good player. You may worry about the word play, because we often use the word play in a trivial sense. Oh, you're just playing. Is life, you mean life is nothing but a game? The Hindus indeed call the creation of the universe the leela, or the game, or the play of the divine. But we also use play in other senses. When you see Hamlet, which is by no means trivial, you are still going to a play. In church, the organist plays the organ. And in the book of Proverbs, it is written that the divine wisdom created the world by playing before the throne of God. Play also, you see, has a deep sense. When we say music, even the music of Bach, as a great master of what we call serious music, is still playing. And so in the deeper sense of play, the Hindu sees this world as play, and therefore that the intense situations, personally, socially, and so on, that we're all involved in, are seen not as bad illusions, but as magnificent illusions, so well acted that they've just about got most of the actors fooled, so that they've forgotten who they are. And man thinks of himself, when he's been fooled, as a little creature that comes into this world, which is all strange and foreign, and he's just a little puppet of fate, and he's forgotten that the whole thing has at its root the self, which is also yourself.
Listening to Alan Watts from the Spoken Word Library of the Electronic University. For copies of this and other Alan Watts programs, please go to alanwatts.com on the World Wide Web or call us toll-free at 1-800-WO-WATTS. That's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS. The Watts website features free audio downloads, program lists, and information on Watts' life and works. Once again, that's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS.